everybody, and welcome to a stellar Wild Ride with Steve-O. We've got Bill Burr. This guy is an icon. He is a legend. He's a hero to me, and he's always been so nice and supportive of me that I was really looking forward to the day that I would get up the courage to ask him to come on the Wild Ride podcast. And when I did, he said absolutely, and man, did we have a blast. Dude, we laughed so hard on this one, and it really is a lot of fun. Kind of like being at home and taking a dump at my house. I love it, man. It's the one thing I can't stand about being on tour is that I don't have my Hello Tushy bidet. HelloTushy.com is absolutely my favorite sponsor of the Wild Ride podcast, and boy, do they love the listeners of it, because if you go to HelloTushy.com/Steve-O, not only will you get 10% off your order, it's the Tushy Ace. This is a whole toilet seat that goes on your toilet. The seat warms up. It's got a remote control. When you get done pooping, you push the button and you've got a refreshing jet stream of water just pressure cleaning your butthole. And you can set the water temperature to exactly the way you like it. It's the most luxurious experience. It makes being at home so fulfilling for me. And again, if you go to HelloTushy.com/Steve-O, you get 10% off. Plus, this is my favorite product I have ever promoted on this podcast. So jump on this deal and let's get into it.
Hello, sir.
Is anything scarier than knocking on a van door? You're not sure?
Yeah, dude.
What's going on, dude? This is fucking cool.
What's up, dude?
It was so difficult for me to jump on the podcast bandwagon and become the guy asking the question, will you do my podcast? That the only way I could wrap my head around it was to...
Oh, you're a sweetheart.
Yeah, she is.
Part shepherd?
Belgian Malinois.
Street dog.
I found her in the streets of Peru.
Dude, who would let this sweetie go?
Nobody even got her in the first place.
Were there other dogs that looked like her in Peru?
There were rather a few, yeah. Yeah, so
I thought I was podcasting, so forgive my outfit. I was going to dress up a little more.
Oh, dude, not to worry. I thought about giving you a, hey, man, are we still on? But I figured I just wouldn't.
No, at some point I'm going to get an assistant.
I just got my first.
You know what my assistant is people reminding me I'm supposed to be somewhere. Like, oh, thank you, Steve-O, for being my assistant today.
All right.
Yeah, checking out.
I'm editing a movie right now, right in there.
Nice,
so
dude.
I'll be promoting that shamelessly.
Oh, I love it.
Throughout this.
I love it. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Burr.
What's going on?
Dude.
This is already my favorite podcast. To sit here petting a dog while doing a podcast is the most soothing afternoon ever.
Yeah. Well, it's an honor to have you, man. I was...
An honor? Dude, you're a legend. I'm happy to be here. You've been making me laugh for fucking 20 years.
Well, nice. Dude, I appreciate that so much, man.
I think the last time we all saw each other was in New York City. You stopped by the show.
Oh, Caroline's. Yeah, we're psyched, man. I saw this Steve fucking headlining Caroline's. That's a huge one. Caroline's on Broadway.
It was really cool that you came over, and I've seen you since then when comedy started back up, and then we had the outdoor show.
Say, what parking lot did I run into?
Right,
it's like, didn't you do a stunt out here years ago?
They set up in an alley in off Hollywood
Castle?
Boulevard. Not the Magic Castle.
That was a good gig.
Yeah, I heard about that one. Yeah.
Wasn't that one a drive-in?
Well, when they first had it, they the first time I did it, I hadn't done stand-up in like, oh, man. Well, March was when the shit hit, right? Lockdown. Yep. And then we did I think I did that in like June or July. So I always wondered how people stop doing stand-up. It's like, how do you stop? It's so fun. How, like, do you know when it's your last one, right? So when this pandemic hit, remember in the beginning, everyone was like, oh, this is just going to be like, about 14, 21 days, everybody stays inside. Because what everybody's going
to
do.
To the curve.
Because everybody's going to play ball and just listen to the people. No, everybody did whatever the fuck they wanted to do, which is also what makes this country great. So then all of a sudden I took a month off. I'm thinking, well, I've been doing this shit almost 30 years. This is good to take some time off. And somewhere in May, I just stopped even thinking about stand-up. Just stopped thinking about it. Because I usually, like, I see something, I'd be like, oh, I'm going to talk about that. That's basically how I come up with bits. I see something. I don't write it down. I just kind of go up and just riff on the bullshit, and hopefully it turns into something. And somewhere around May, like, I stopped doing that. And I was watching, like, cooking videos and shit, like learning souffles or whatever on the internet. And I had this big fucking panic attack, like going like, oh, my God, like, I kind of, like, through this virus have sort of quit doing comedy. So anyway, when the first one I did coming back was that one at the Magic Castle. And it was outdoors, which is always, you know.
Weird.
You always, if you're doing a show outside, you just automatically feel like you're bombing, because like all the light, all the laughs just go up into the clouds, and it doesn't come at you. Or if there's like a roof, you can feel like, okay, they still like me. Yeah. Let's see if they like me after this one, right?
For sure.
So that was all gone, and they were like in cars, and
beeping.
And no, they had those. You know those stupid things you go like this, and it's two hands clapping.
Oh.
So it's like these plastic things. So you tell a joke out into this dark parking lot. And there would just be like this brutal pause that felt like a kick to the chest, and then you just hear a couple.
But couldn't they just clap at that point if they're holding a clapper? Like, what's the difference?
Were they holding them outside the window?
Most people, if they're just told to do something, they do it.
I guess so. Yeah,
so nobody doesn't. People don't start to think, and then you have the other people who think too much, and then they start thinking the world's flat. But there is a sweet spot where you're in a show could be like, or I could just do this.
Right.
And then they were like, they would flick their lights, they beeped, but what I got out of it, it was funny. It was a one show adjustment. By the second show, like those little tick 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 things, I got in the mindset like, oh, this is what killing sounds like. All right. And or having a good set sounds like. But what I got out of it was I was saying when I was on there, I go, when this fucking pandemic is over and somebody says to you, hey, man, I am the biggest fan of stand-up comedy, you have to say, oh, yeah? Did you sit in your Ford Focus in a fucking parking lot with plastic hands because you missed hearing jokes? I was like, you guys, you're like the people that went through, like, the Depression or the Dust Bowl of, like, comedy. You can say, I was there, man.
That's funny.
I fucking showed up. Where were you?
Yeah,
weren't you relieved when the were you touring when the pandemic happened, and then you didn't have to get on the plane? You're like, oh, thank God.
I'll tell you the one thing I did not miss was LAX
for sure.
Yeah,
I every time I go into LAX, all it is you just want to get to your seat on the plane and know that your bag fit.
Yeah,
and then it's just like, okay, now I have the amazing technology of travel where I'm going to go across the country and what used to take people, you know, months. And they die and shit. I'm going to do this in 6 hours. I'm going to fucking complain. Louis C.K. had a great bit about that. And I never forgot that, because I was one of those people bitching on the plane. I saw Louis one time on Conan just going, dude, you're in the fucking sky. Oh, the internet doesn't work. It's like,
flying. Well, like, really? Did you fly?
I'm so guilty.
You used to have to, like, hike through the fucking mountains, and we're just flying over them. You just in there, Jesus Christ,
wearing suits.
We're only in
like
Denver. You know, I was totally one of those guys. It was one of the, like, my favorite bits that I love, and Louis does this a lot in guys of his caliber, where they sort of expose you for the shithead you are, and it's those jokes are the best when you're by yourself, because you can't play it off. You just got to sit there like, yeah, he's right.
Dude, I'm 100% guilty of complaining. I complained about airports and airplanes so much. Like, I can't. But after the pandemic, when we came back and we had to wear the fucking masks and just, like, after that break, it was so much harder to get through an airport and a flight.
And they were, like, delayed more because there was no people flying.
Right. I was a big mask guy, dude. I loved them.
I'm down for them.
I loved the mask. I fucking loved the mask.
You like wearing it? Or you like other people wearing it? Like,
I mean, I've given up on all of that or whatever. Because I don't even know if they even fucking worked at this point. You know what I mean? But I was going to listen to some shithead who has no medical degree tell me they don't fucking work. Oh, is that what your fucking degree, your lack of a degree tells you? It's just like, so I'm going to go with the liars I know rather than people that you know that they're being lied to, but then it's like, well, then now what do I do? Now I'm going to step off into the wild and just assume because someone got kicked out of the medical field that they were one of the good guys that not everybody who gets kicked out of the medical field gets kicked out because they're a good person and they're telling the truth. There is that.
Yeah.
And there's definitely, you know, pharmaceutical companies, synthetic heroin, all kinds of crazy shit that they don't get called on, killing a bunch of people. You know, so I understood where, like, that was coming from. But, like, you know, I was in my emotions like everybody else, and you just wanted it to be over. And it was just like, just do what they say so at least we're all on the same page so they can get some sort of analytics to try to get us out of it. So I was into that for a while. And then after a while, I was just like, I'm just gonna sound like the old man. You know, pick up your trash. I was just like, all right, I'm going to do what I, you know, I think everybody at some point came to, I'm going to do what feels right and then like that. But I got to be honest with you, I miss the mask. I miss it, dude.
I was, dude,
you get out of so many fucking conversations. Like, conversations become quicker. It's like, why not? It just becomes really efficient. Yeah. And then you just get the fuck out of there. And then it's like, there's no record of you really being there. You're always just walking around like you're robbing a bank. It was kind of fucking awesome.
I was in an airport yesterday, and I had two thoughts as I walked in. Oh, I don't have to wear a mask. But then my next thought was, oh, but I'm about to walk into, like, the hell of taking pictures every fucking 5 seconds. And I was like, man, I had a panic that I didn't have my mask in my pocket. It's like, wow. Man, I just want to cover my face.
Yeah, it's like a comfort thing.
I fortunately don't really have to deal with that, which is good. No, you, this guy's like a fucking movie star, man. Like, I have my niche. I got my shit jokes and the people that like it, and I'll just run into somebody like, hey, aren't you that guy, right? It's like, yeah, I like being at that level.
I think with you, though, people are like, might be timid to come up because you might just roast the shit out of them if they come wrong or something like that.
Yeah, well, I think that I'm...
No, I just tease people if they're being...
Yeah.
Like, I went to this thing the other day, right? It was just this thing that was disguised as a brunch, and it just turned out to be this big marketing meeting. It was fucking hilarious. So I'm sitting there and I'm eating this lamb chop and this guy comes up to me and starts talking to me. And I just looked at him. I was like, you know, you had 3 hours and 55 minutes to not talk to me when I was eating a lamb chop. I'm going to be here for 4 hours. Can I just eat this thing? Are you going to keep asking me right after I took a bite? He was another comedian and he laughed and he's a friend of mine and everything like that. But then, of course, he rolled with it. He's like, no, man, I'm going to talk to you through this whole fucking lamb chop. Then it became fun. And it didn't bother me because it became a bit. But if somebody's just doing it, then it's annoying. So I found with people like that, I mean, that, you know, it's cool that they want to talk to you and that type of stuff. So, like, you always have to be like, okay, somebody could not be doing this, but the payoff then is I'm selling no tickets. And I'm back to that, you know, sitting in that fucking one-bedroom apartment with my IKEA furniture.
Yeah.
And all kinds of rug available for yoga because I don't have any money. So I would rather have this existence, but the happy medium of that selling tickets,
right,
and living a great life is wearing a mask. Yeah. That's why I wish I was Asian, because I could get away with it, because they've been wearing them for, like, the Asians are the shit, man. They've been wearing them since fucking SARS. They used to wear them on the plane when they had a cold, they had a cold, and the level of consideration. I don't want to give it to the rest of the plane.
Nobody does that.
It's amazing. But if you've ever been over to Asia, which is incredible, is there's so many people there that you understand that okay, this is how we're living, so we have that. And I think, you know, with every area of the world, you can learn something. I'm kind of like, you know, it would be cool, because I remember before the pandemic, when you'd get on a plane, you'd sit next to some guy, and he's just, and it'd be like, you know, it'd be great if this guy was wearing,
the
you're just
whole seeing
like, oh, so this is what my life's going to look like in 3 days.
Yeah, this is me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I love that I've been able to graduate to the tour bus and the theaters.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Dude, you already don't have a real job, and then you get to travel around like fucking Barry Manilow. You know, he's fucking amazing. Fucking, I mean, dragging, dude, a piano behind you.
I say this a lot, that I really believe anybody who claims that they're on the comedy club circuit because they love comedy is either lying or more mentally ill than I am.
No, I took mushrooms and finally figured out after 50-something years why I actually do comedy. Like, I thought I did it because I loved comedy. And I realized, no, that's not why I do it. It was like, it was the easiest way to go into a room full of people, make them like you, and then they won't beat the shit out of you. That was the subconscious. I need to make people like me so this bullshit stops.
Yeah. Do you travel with a tour bus?
No, I mean, I have, the only way to make a tour bus work, I find, is if you, because you got to do like a run of dates.
Yeah.
So you got to pay for the bus. And then you do that stupid rock star thing because the driver's like, hey, you want to take off right after the gig? You're like, yeah, fuck it. Let's get some of the drive out of the way. And you don't realize that you're paying overtime. Yeah. It was like one time when my wife was pregnant, we were getting work done in the house because we had to make a baby room. So we rented this house, and we fucking heated the pool for the whole fucking month like idiots, not realizing how much it cost. It cost me twice as much what it cost to rent the fucking house. So the tour bus can be like that, where you're like, oh yeah, I paid for it. It costs this much. You don't realize there's overages. So I just, yeah. I go out, and if I can drive to another gig, because I still love driving, I go out with Club Soda Kenny, and we get like a, like just like, you know, SUV and just cruise. And then I like, you know, hitting spots, you know, mom and pop spots to eat, right, and shit like that, and having something to look forward to while I'm out there. So the guilt of not being there with my kids, but FaceTime helps that. So I never go out more than like 3-4 days. But if I single and if I didn't have kids, then I would get a cluster of cities done.
Yeah.
Via tour bus. The great thing about the tour bus is, like, it's a great way to stay out of trouble. You can get in a lot of trouble, but if you use it right, it's literally like you're just insulated. I go, I do my show, I come back, I watch a movie, I hang with the other comics, and it's cool.
Yeah.
The hell of the comedy club grind was the airports, the airplanes, the radio stations, and the hotels. And the tour bus takes all of that away.
Yes.
You just have a cozy little pad which magically just shows up where you have to do your 1 hour of work.
Oh no, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I knew guys that would literally have the tour bus pull up to their house. They would pull up to their house like, all right, honey, see you later. And they just get on the bus.
They just have no date scheduled.
No. They're going golfing. Yeah. Going golfing around the country. Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, it's insane. None of it makes sense, like how big comedy is right now. I kind of think I figured out what, but I think the thing about it is like, it's not like music where there's like genres that have their time, you know, like metal or disco or grunge. Comedy, people always want to laugh. So I feel like as a comedian, an old comedian at this point, I have to keep going down to the store because the young comics keep you young. And comedy does change like music, but as long as you're in it, you don't notice it. You know, it's like watch, you don't see yourself aging. And then you look 3 years ago, it's like, fuck, what happened to me? You know, it's the same thing with like comedy. If you're down there every night, it's changing incrementally and you kind of get dragged along with it. And I found that guys, when they get to the tour bus theater thing, you got to keep doing the clubs because young comics keep you young because it's not a real way to explain it, but like, I used to see, you know, I've been in this business so long, I remember the heyday of like sitcoms, and comics would get sitcoms, and they would, once they got to that third season and it looked like they were going to make syndication, you'd just see them less and less at the club. And the thing would go like 6-7 seasons, and all of a sudden they didn't do stand-up for the better part of a decade, and then they would come back. And
like Ray Romano or something, right?
No, Ray always did it. And that's why he... No,
his last special was so funny. Ray
so
Romano,
great. And
so
that's good. And I used to watch guys like Ray and Jerry and all of them. They would keep doing it. But then I saw other guys I won't name who didn't do it. And when they came back, it was like they had to learn how to do it again. Mm. And they would be like, he would get super frustrated and they would feel their age. And
like Zoolander 2.
Yeah.
That was a bad movie.
I don't think I even saw it, but I believe you.
I never saw it.
Yeah.
You know, in defense of the actors in those things, they usually don't want to do the second one, and then they go, we'll give you this. Nah, man, I just don't, this really, we told the story. Nah, man, we'll give you this.
Yeah.
You're going to give me the, and we'll give you that. I was like, all right, fuck it, I'll do it. And then you get in there, and it's just like, I always wondered if as you're making a movie, if you know it's bad, like, because there's no way to tell.
No, like, because just, everybody on the crew is just like, that was so good. And right. everybody's kind of doing that. And then it gets to the theater and they're like,
it's well, a great question.
And fuck? Until it's cut together, like, you don't know. You know, like, that felt
right. Well, good, we're doing, but... we're sitting right now outside.
Oh, yeah. What is it that you're doing here? Now, I just asked Bill that question, and he's going to answer it by giving me the information he wants me to know, which is a very sensible approach. Now, in other areas of my life, do you think I want to be giving people information that I don't want them to know? Because that is happening left and right if you are not using NordVPN. VPN stands for Virtual Private Network. What it does is it disguises your location, your IP address, so that people can't be snooping around, getting your private info, your passwords, into your bank accounts, all that. It's just crucial cybersecurity 101. And on top of that, by using NordVPN and changing your location on the internet, changing your IP address, you can switch your location to be in other different countries and access all of the content that those countries provide. Let's say, for example, I want to enjoy the better quality shows on British Netflix. Boom, NordVPN makes that super easy. It makes me safer, it makes me happier, and it brings me joy by opening up a whole world of content to me. You'd be crazy not to sign up for it, and they've got an exclusive deal for you, the listeners of the Wild Ride podcast. You go to nordvpn.com/Stevo, or just use the promo code Stevo at nordvpn.com, and you get a huge discount off of NordVPN, plus you get an anti-malware feature, and it's risk-free with the 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not totally satisfied. So jump on this, man. Get on over to nordvpn.com/Stevo and feel safer and, man, watch better TV. All right. What's Bill Burr up to?
I shot a movie called Old Dads that I wrote with my writing partner, Ben Tischler. And the first time I got to direct something, I was in the thing and we were just making it. Every day I was saying to the producers, like, is this good? Do you think it's good? Do you think we have it?
Yeah.
Did we get this scene and everything? And now that we're editing it, we're almost through the first editing. But I got to tell you, dude, when you first look at the assembly, the fat cut, especially a comedy, this is basically the journey that you go through. It's like every day you do 6 minutes is what we've been doing. So you come in, and in the first 6 minutes, you sit there and look at the footage. And in the morning, you think, I just made the worst movie Hollywood has ever seen. I'm going to be living with my parents. And then somewhere around noon, you're like, you start getting hope. And by the end of the day, you're like, dude, this movie's going to be fucking awesome. We're going to do a whole bunch. And then the next day, you come back in, the next 6 minutes, you're like, oh my God, I made the worst movie ever. And it just keeps going through. So I'm hoping when we go to the second, when you do like 20 minutes a day, you can get through it quicker. And I've been talking to everybody that I know that are directors. They go, no, dude, it just keeps tightening up and tightening up and tightening up. And I've been leaning on them a lot, and a bunch of friends of mine. And I find that directors are really, really supportive. Really supportive people.
So. Yeah, wasn't there that Martin Scorsese quote when he's like, if your first cut doesn't make you feel like you're a fucking complete disaster, you're not on the right track.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, I talked to a guy, I worked on this thing, I'm not dropping any names, but this a big actor, and he had made a movie that I loved. And he goes, let me tell you something about that movie. He goes, when I saw the assembly of that thing, he goes, I thought I ruined my career. Mm-hmm. And he was so, like, stunned of how bad it was when he looked, how bad he thought it was, because it ended up being a great movie. He was riding the subway. He was in New York. He was riding the subway, and he had a cut of the movie next to him, and he was just sitting on the train, this stunned look when he got to his stop. He was so fucked in the head, he got off without the footage. He just left it. He just walked off like a zombie. Yeah.
I did, when I did the India thing, the first thing I saw, I was like, I just wasted all that fucking money on this dog shit.
How long does it take for you guys Because your shit is so tight and it's just bit. And there's and every scene has like fucking 8 guys in it. And it's just like, oh my God.
Does it go straight from the shot to the editing bay, or how does that work?
Let's get into the minutia of editing. I think that this is what this is what people. So when you have a dirty over, what program
are they using?
Is that a stutter cut they
were
doing?
They record on Avid, or they edit on Avid. I do believe it goes straight in there, and we take our time. We'll shoot for like a week or two, and then we'll just shut down, and they'll work on it. So by the end of it, we can be more targeted about what we're even going to shoot. Like,
and then how does it work with all of those guys? People got to be like, dude, you didn't get my fucking backflip in there. Why isn't that?
Oh, dude, everything.
I landed on
everything.
Those tacks for nothing.
Nary a personality in the film has not had butt hurt moments where they really, really like throw temper tantrum. Well, more like feelings tantrums.
Well, what you guys do to your body, the fact that no one's going to see it, and it's like, so I did that for nothing so I can feel that when I'm 80?
Yeah. Right.
100%. I almost just lost a testicle for nothing.
Yeah. It's insane. So this is a independent film.
It's with Miramax. Oh, so so we put it together and then we do the dance to go sell it. So that's what it's going to be.
Cool, man.
As far as I know, this is my first. I'm usually just, you know, the dancing monkey actor guy, and they go, "All right, thanks a lot." And then a year later it comes out. So now it's kind of cool to go through the whole process, minus the 1,500 panic attacks I've had throughout this whole thing.
And this was your first time directing, like, anything?
Yes.
And it was a movie. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's kind of a daunting task.
I had a lot of help.
Okay.
I had a lot of help, and I made, you know, and I came up with this system that worked, especially when I was, like, going to be on camera on a scene. So, like, I actually being an actor helped. Mm. Because I hate when you, if you do a scene and after the first take, the director's already out there going, you missed this beat and this and make this blah, blah, blah. And then you do another one and then they come out again. By the time the third take, you're like nose blind. Like, I don't even know what this fucking thing is about. So we came up with this thing. I was joking with everybody there. I was like, you got to let the horses run. You got to let the horses run. You got to do 3 takes of this thing because everybody knows what they're doing as far as actors. But it's like, I don't know what you're going to do. So I got, so he's bringing that. I got to have time to take in what you're doing and you take in what I'm doing. And then after like 3 was the magic number, as usual, that it would start to get legs. And then you could start to guide it. And then how you give notes is the way. You don't come in saying you're not doing this. You come in pause. Like, you say, okay, that was great. We got that. We got that is great when somebody's completely in the opposite. Okay, we have that version.
We got, yeah.
But all the seasoned actors knew. They were all like going like, oh, you see, fucking hated that. I was like, no. It's just, I need as many, dude. I'm going to be in the edit room. I need as many options as I can. But like, that was always hard when he had a seasoned vet. Can you try it this way? And they would be like, well, that means you're not going to use the other one. And I'm just like, can you just fucking...
You directed it, but you also acted in it.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Stupid. It was a stupid move.
How long were you filming for?
It was weird for like a week and a half, and then we had the system down, and then everybody just gelled, and it was a really fun set. Everybody had a good time, and then I just kept getting food trucks to keep just keeping everybody happy.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way to go, which is great when you grow up in like a volatile environment. You learn how to keep people chill.
Yeah, how to sort of keep things
all
the
of
level.
That
yeah,
shit helps out, or you know. So yeah, that's kind of what we did, and I think we're dealing with shit right now that I'm gonna have to go deal with.
That's cool. So this is a nice break for you to not look at the screen for a while.
Yeah.
Was
yeah, now it is. Oh, so
pet a dog
it
and
was
just
production at the kind of post pandemic.
Wait, is it?
She's purring.
She's snoring. Oh my God. Can we please get audio of that? I'm going to go to sleep to that.
I call that purring.
Oh my God. She's like the dog and the fucking Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
Not the dog. I mean, the frog. But it wouldn't sing when you wanted to. You know what I love about dogs is they remind you that you need to sigh a lot during the day. They do it all the time. I saw the dog do that. My dog unfortunately passed away a little while ago, but I got to. Once the kids get bigger, we're going to get them. And I always love that about dogs, is even though they're lying down and chilling and not doing nothing, they still every once in a while just go, You're right, buddy. You're right. I always feel like they're reacting to my energy, like, of all the fucking dog owners, I had to get this fucking guy.
It's like an eye roll.
I got a good 10 to 15 years. I'm supposed to be living a dog's life, and I got this guy with Wall Street fucking energy walking around the house.
Yeah, I'm a particularly needy dog owner where she's like, oh, this fucking guy.
Yeah.
No, but dogs need a needy owner. I feel like strong people get cats. As much as people who have cats, like, dog people, like, you know, I'd say strong / reptilian cold people, kind of like cats.
Yeah, because you get less love from a cat. Like, the dog is to love you. Like,
yeah.
Because you need it.
Oh, yeah.
And it helps, you know. Yeah, the cat is like, right. you got to be good without the cat.
Dogs are greeters, man. You come home, yeah, they fucking flip out. It's awesome.
They're the best.
Cats, you can be dying, and they just, like, fucking just walk away from your body.
And if you die and no one comes in there, they start eating you.
Yeah.
Do they?
There's no food, yeah.
Wow.
Is that like a thing?
That is a thing. Because I know I ran into somebody cats. I went to high school with, and they were like, you remember old man so-and-so? He's like, yeah, he died. They came in, the cat ate half his face, and I'm just like, hey, man, good to see you too. I guess you really never can go home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dogs will, like, run over and pick up the phone and dial 911 and, like, you know, pound on your heart.
Yeah, they'll
jump
through the window,
uh-huh,
cut themselves.
Okay, I got a random question. I was like really thought about this. Genuinely curious. Right. If you've ever apologized for a joke. I was legitimately nervous to ask that question. Genuinely scared. And I'm also very nervous about what I'm about to share right now. It's sensitive information, but I'm so proud. I just have to blurt this out. Last night, for the first time in my over 5-year relationship with Lux, she came twice in one bone sesh. Is that something? I mean, unbelievable. So what's the secret to my success with my sex life with Lux? I'm just going to go ahead and say, Blue Chew tablets, baby. What are Blue Chew tablets? They're delicious. They have the same active ingredient as both Viagra and Cialis, except they only cost a fraction of the price. They give you a super boner for super sex, like the sex I had with Lux last night. Yeah, dude. Man. Now, of course, you have to have a prescription to get this. I mean, I think everybody knows that. But what's so great about Blue Chew tablets is that you don't have to go to a doctor's office or anything like that. You simply consult with the medical provider at bluechew.com. It's very quick, it's very easy, and your Blue Chew tablets are on the way. Plus, here's the great news for the listeners of the Wild Ride podcast. If you use the promo code STEVO at BlueChew.com, you get an entire month's supply of Blue Chew tablets absolutely for free. All you have to pay is $5 for shipping. Again, that is an entire month's supply of Blue Chew tablets, which I love with all of my heart, absolutely for free. All you got to pay is $5 for shipping. So jump on it and have fun boning. Now, let's see how this question goes over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do it to the individual that I hurt. If I'm in a bad mood, okay, now some asshole's going to cut that right there. See, comedian should apologize, because that's everybody's like Fox News and CNN now, like staring at it. They'll cut out all this part. No, if I'm in like a bad mood, and like, or if I told a joke about something that somebody had a personal effect to, and I made him sad or made him cry, you know, there's that comic thing, well, fuck you, lady, you shouldn't have come out. Like, I don't take it to that level. It's just like, yeah, you're right, you know, I didn't think of that. I didn't know you were going to be here tonight. What are the fucking odds you were at that thing that I was making fun of? You know what I mean? But that can happen. But what I think is, I refuse to apologize to anybody that is upset that they heard a joke at a show they weren't at. You know, especially if somebody filmed. Okay, if it's in my special, that's different. I decided to, like, put it out or whatever. But, like, you know, if it's one of those things where someone in the crowd films you and then they put it up, it's like, get mad at them and you, because you saw the subject and you clicked on it. So I mean that's yeah, you had all of these other fucking things. They have like they have videos of just dogs snoring that you could watch and feel good about your day. But yeah. You went out of your way to fucking watch this thing. It's on you.
Well, the fact that it's shown up in their algorithm means that they're fucking already in the energy field of all those videos. Yeah.
And that's something I love to do, blaming the victim. I like it.
Well, what were you watching if you saw it?
Yeah. Yeah, how did it pop up on your feed?
No, I'm a big believer in if you are wrong and you feel you're wrong, you apologize. But I'm not a believer in the mob mentality, and I'm now going to apologize just because it's not worth it. Because then all I do is give that strength that's okay to do that, and then some other comic's gonna have to deal with it. So if you come up to me after a fucking show, I mean, I'll listen to you and I'll be like, and if I agree with what you're saying, I'll be
I fucked up, I'm sorry.
It wasn't a personal thing. I'm sorry you went through that or whatever. And I found you can like actually they'll be cool with you in the end. You know, people like anybody like us, we want to be heard. So but as far as that you know, that professional being offended so you can move whatever cause because you feel like you can fix society, you know, with your ideas. I mean, I don't get into that.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you enjoy doing better, TV shows or movies? Or stand-up?
I will tell you this. It was a long time ago. It used to be movies, but now TV shows are so badass. Speaking of which, we're in a credit here. Reservation Dogs.
Yeah,
I had a blast doing that. Breaking Bad, Chappelle Show.
Breaking Bad made it that way. I feel like.
Yeah, I would say The Wire before that.
Sopranos.
HBO and
Dexter.
Basic cable was the thing that showed like all of a sudden like, you know, you can go to this level. And I'm still waiting for the sitcom to get to that level, and I feel like there's always been like a glass ceiling on how funny you can be in front of a live audience, like at a sitcom, because the suits get all nervous with any sort of thing that isn't like, you know, just a fastball, you know, good American values right over the plate. And that's why I was really rooting for when Norton and Louis did Louis' sitcom. Like, I thought what Louis was doing was gonna like hopefully break. Jay Moore a long time ago did a great one. He played Peter Dragon. What the hell was it? He played this producer, and that was on Fox, and that was another one that I thought sort of. But that was more of a one camera, but that sort of expanded to like, you know, okay, people are adults. They know what's phony now, so they want to see something that's real or absolutely absurd, I feel. And especially because now the average person on YouTube is making a video and then they read comments. So even they, in a way, are like in an editing bay and they learn what plays and what doesn't. And they actually know what it, in a small way, what it's like to make something creatively and bomb and have it get zero stars and, you know, and have all of those awful feelings.
How was it to make like F is for Family? You were able to like let a joke breathe a lot more than like a sitcom, right, or a TV show.
Yeah, and Netflix was awesome because their thing was when we did it. I remember when they read the pilot episode, they were going like, "Yeah, push it further," and that was like the dream note that you were waiting for. But like that was one of those things. Like Mike Price from The Simpsons, he's the co-creator and the showrunner. He was the captain of that ship, so I can only take so much credit. He, like, if you like F is for Family, Mike Price is the reason why you like it, because all of that stuff that I had to do on this movie now, I already respected Mike, but now having done this, I'm like, oh my God, like, the amount of questions that this guy has to answer that I didn't, and the amount of decisions that he had to make. So, and then also, you know, Vince Vaughn, when I pitched doing an animated show, it'd been a while since like comedians had done like an animated show, like Howie Mandel and Louis Anderson, rest his soul, had done those, and they, you know, this industry's really like what's happening now. So someone hadn't done one in a minute. So I think me pitching a cartoon was weird, but Vince Vaughn got behind it and was sitting there in the pitch meeting. So when they were looking at me, he's like, "Why does this idiot want to do a cartoon, they'd be like, oh my God, that's an A-list movie star. That's yeah. Vince Vaughn. He believes in it. So I always felt like Peter Billingsley and Vince Vaughn, I got to make sure I say everybody's name that got that thing going. They were the reason why that thing got on the air. And then I just, you know, I mean, I literally learned how to write a script on that thing. I learned how to do three different takes of a line, all of that shit that I didn't know because I came up as a comedian. I'm like, I tell the joke. This is how I tell it. If it bombs, I yeah. move on to next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the idea with comedy? Like you got into comedy to do acting or did you just only want to be a comedian and it kind of just happened?
I always want to be a comedian. All the comedians that I love became great comics, obviously. Those ones that I watched. And then they
got picked up on stuff.
Yeah, like, you know, Richard Pryor, Eddie Murphy, Cheech and Chong, all of them. And then they would go into movies. And I was really watching. And then you'd see other people that they get a shot. And because they were in comedy clubs and didn't take enough acting classes, when they got their shot, you know, you'd get your shot. And if you didn't, it's not like today, man. Back then, when you got your shot, that was your shot. And if you didn't get it, dude, like you got put all the way to the back of the line, dude. And I'm telling you, you had to wait like 7-8 years. You had to wait for studio execs to die or get fired. To be like, is it okay to go back in that building again? Because they're going to be like, oh, yeah, we tried something with you and it didn't work. You're the it doesn't work guy.
So you just stayed in comedy for a while?
No, I started taking acting classes early on.
Oh.
Yeah, it was always acting and comedy, yeah.
I remember I ran into a comedian. And he was one of these guys that he was a young comic and a redhead, I think. I think that was him. Yeah, a long time ago. And he told me a story like, you know, I went down to New York and he had this look on his face. And he goes, dude, I went up and I killed. And there was some head of NBC was there. And they were like, dude, you're so castable. And they brought me in. They gave me a script and I didn't know what to do with it. And the way he told the story, I just never forgot. And he's like, dude, my biggest advice to you, forget all this comedy stuff. Just keep doing it. But like take acting classes along the way. So when you get your shot, you
don't blow it.
Yeah, you don't blow it. So thank you to him.
That's good.
I saw something where you said that you learned how to fly a helicopter because you looked into the banking system.
Am I wrong?
I mean
what's going on right now?
Yeah, you almost got your motorcycle.
Well, right. Like, I was on a fucking airplane flying across the Atlantic to London, sitting next to a guy who was on the U.S. rowing team. He was going to go compete in fucking Finland or something.
Dude, how shredded was his back?
Seven.
And he's sitting there reading this book by Neil Strauss called, fucking How to Survive, some survival guide thing. And I was interested because Neil Strauss wrote the Motley Crue book, and he's like this epic writer.
I was going to say, talk about a wide variety.
Right.
I guess it's all about survival if you're talking about Motley Crue. Yeah, <that's true. laughs> These guys somehow survived being in Motley Crue and going to Singapore.
So this guy explains what the book's about. He's like, oh, well, in the case of natural disaster or economic collapse or, you know, nuclear or whatever, like there was just a whole variety of scenarios which represented shit hitting the fan, and the first thing you gotta do is get the fuck out. And he said that this guy recommended motorcycles because you could split lanes to get out.
That's great. It's a lot cheaper than a helicopter license.
So I turn around and like the next fucking...
I only have a two-seater too, so I'm going to make a Sophie's choice. Who's coming? Who's staying? Well, I'm not waiting for the next one. I know I'm going.
I turn around and fucking... And enroll in motorcycle school because I bought onto the idea of this, you know.
That's
like,
cool though. But then you learn something.
I know, but here's the fucking thing, dude. Like,
what did you ride?
As soon as I enrolled in motorcycle school, and I enrolled, and it's going to be like another weeks before I actually have the classes. Yeah. As soon as I enrolled, every single fucking everywhere I went, someone's like, oh, I had to go visit somebody in the hospital. They were like, you know, they fucking motorcycle. It was motorcycles just kept coming up in conversation, and it was always the worst fucking thing. And then when I got there to the actual class, I realized that, like, you got to have, like, a clutch on the motorcycle, and I've never even learned how to drive stick in my life. So while they're trying to teach me, I'm like, oh, well, fuck, you know, like, got to remember the clutch, and you know, it just delays your reaction time, and already... Like, I'm just like, I'm a dead duck.
Can I ask you a question? When you were in the... Because I took the motorcycle safety course, and I got my license and all that. I rode for like 2 months, and someone almost took my head off going over the double line in a turn. And I remember, like, coming back. I was riding a Triumph Bonneville, and I was literally shaking. And I was, and it's funny, because I never pray. So I dial up God for the first time in years. And it's like, oh, look who called. What do you want, Bill? Right? So, never called just to say hi, do you? So this fucking guy puts me on speaker doing this shit, right? So I fucking, I just said, if you let me get back to Dean Del Rey's garage without losing my leg or my life, I swear to God, I'll never ride this fucking thing again. And I didn't. But now I kind of got it back again. And I'm thinking of getting like a dirt bike. Just to ride around. I fly out of this little ass airport, and I'm just going to ride around there where it's safe, so I still have the skill.
Yeah.
So I know how to do it, because I think they're fucking badass, man. But when you took the class, didn't you look at a couple people just being like, why? This person's going to die.
Right.
Yeah. I remember
that was Steve.
It was a three-day class. The first day was in a classroom. The second day was in a parking lot. And the third day was in a parking lot. And I fucking... quit after the first parking lot day. I'm a motorcycle school dropout. Oh. Now it didn't
you
hurt.
You could have just completed, because you would have got through.
I know,
it.
But here's the thing.
And then you know how to do it, and you don't have to ride.
I almost shouldn't say this, but after my first day in the parking lot, actually riding the motorcycle, I had a date later that night with, like,
I didn't want to say anything.
A fucking really, like, she was, like, voted by Maxim magazine, like, the seventh hottest woman on the planet.
So the next day to get up to go to class.
And when she asked her if I wanted to meet her dogs, I did. And I never left.
Yeah, that's a real...
You know what? That's a good excuse for not completing. That's all right. Seventh hottest woman in the world.
And he blamed it on, like, motorcycle accidents and deaths.
I said, you know what? I'm not going to go to motorcycle class. I, that shit was going to fucking kill me anyway.
Most guys ride motorcycles so they can meet that chick. You like, preempted it. Yeah, exactly. Like, what do I need a motorcycle for? Yeah. All I'm going to do is get road rash in my dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, you're like, but, looking at the stats, I just don't think it's right.
It's just not safe.
It's not safe.
And then you just raw dog the random chick.
Nah.
Safer than riding a motorcycle.
A lot safer. How often do you fly your helicopter?
Well, what sucks is right now, because I'm involved in this, I'm not allowed to fly.
Okay.
They're like, they'd say, okay, you can try and kill yourself after we get a cut of the movie. So I haven't flown since February, right before, because I didn't realize that. But I mean, I went up with an instructor or whatever. So I'm like, you know, really safe. And those, you know. As my instructor says, aviation is as safe as you are. And you would be surprised. Like, there's only two types of pilots. Pilots that know they can die, and then the other people who just show up, like, I mean, bullshit pre-flight, just fucking cranking and just take off. You look at their whole attitude when they take off. It's like, dude, if you have an engine failure right now, you're just going to nose into the ground. Or you see people, like, flying super low, flying really slow. It's like you're dead. If your engine dies, you don't have enough altitude to regain your airspeed to keep this fucking thing going, to go into a flare, like an auto rotation, and you're fucking dead. So there's like, you know, with anything, dude, there's like these major things that if you implement them, you look at the weather, you do your I only fly when it's nice out. I only fly up to a certain knots of winds, because I mean, I can fly in it, but why do I want to be up there fucking bumping around and everything? And, you know, you can get the odds in your favor. And now, like, you should see, I'll show it to you some. Like, the cockpit I have, all glass cockpit, and I'm literally like an air traffic controller now with the technology, where you can, back in the day, when I first started flying, Like, you would just talk to people. You didn't know where anybody was. It was just them reporting. So if you went out, you know, east of here, where all these fucking yahoos are, who aren't, they don't even talk on the radio, and all of a sudden they'll go flying by you, and you're like, dude, what the fuck? Now you can see them coming. You can literally, like, put your finger on the screen, and their tail number will show up. Mm. And you can talk to them. The arrow points in what direction they're going. There's a thing that says plus six, minus five, I mean 600 above you. So you know exactly where the fuck they are. So.
Is that bad for drug smugglers?
Huh? I got a good one for you. Instructor told me, you know, when anytime the vice president or the president comes in town, there's just a massive TFR wherever they are. Temporary flight restriction. Like, you're not allowed to fly in there. And if you do, you're warned, and then you get intercepted by, like, a fucking, I don't know what, you know, an F-16, which wouldn't work with a helicopter because we fly so slow, they'd have to keep going by us. So they probably sent some sort of presidential-level Secret Service helicopter up there. There was a guy flew into a TFR, didn't do his pre-flight, and that's one of the things you do. You look to see if there's, because you get in major fucking trouble if you fly into one of those, even if you just fly over Dodger Stadium 2 hours before the game. Yeah. There's the 2 hours before the game and after, because there's going to be all of those people. They just, you know, don't fly over that. If you fly into that, the FAA is calling your tail number. I mean, I don't know what happens. I don't want to find out what happens. So this fucking idiot did not check, and he flew right into it, and he wasn't on the radio, and he got intercepted, and they landed, and it turned out it was a drug smuggler coming up from Mexico, which usually then you're not going to be on the radio, but at least fly around the shit, and they forced him down, and he had a whole plane full of drugs, and that was it. And if he had just looked at his TFRs, he could have still been bringing cocaine into this country.
Yeah, you can't even fly a drone over Dodger Stadium during the game, or you go to jail. I mean, it's pretty.
Did you fly a drone over Dodger Stadium during the game?
No.
Dude, there's a guy, and they can't find him, and I don't understand why. The guy has a fucking jetpack.
Yeah,
and he's been hovering right outside. Like, every couple of months, he'll just be there
at Dodger Stadium.
No, at LAX. And he's sitting there like he's at fucking Buck Rogers. So my thing is, like, how many people buy jetpacks? Like, we can't get some people on this. So the funniest shit ever that's online, you have to listen to the radio calls. Is they're talking to somebody flying in anywhere from 300 to 600 people. Going, yeah, just like, you know, after the left, you got a guy in a jetpack, and then the pilot's like, yeah, we see him.
And what, he's just,
and everybody sees this shit, and he's just sitting there.
And yeah, they don't know who he is, right? It's like a mystery.
I don't understand on what black market this guy bought this fucking jetpack. Yeah. Because I remember I was watching the first 48 one time, and this fucking idiot bought a 50 caliber Desert Eagle, and I guess not a lot of people have them, and he killed somebody with them, and then they just went, all right, who bought a Desert Eagle? It was like, you should have become the first 48 people. Minutes. They fucking caught this guy in like an hour.
That's the best show ever.
Yeah, well, I got a buddy of mine, former cop, hates that show. Because I was watching that show going, well, like, I don't understand why they keep talking. I'm like, all you do is say, right. Am I being charged with anything? If I want a lawyer. If not, I'm leaving. He goes, that's why I hate that show. Because it teaches dirtbags how to beat the system. The worst one I ever saw was they brought this guy in. They go, and there was some old guy that was got murdered in the park. And they say to this guy, he's a suspect. And they go, hey, do you know old man Johnson or whatever? He's like, yeah, I know him. He goes, you good friends with him? He goes, yeah, I see him around. He goes, I hate to tell you this, but we just found him in the park. He was murdered. And the guy, just worst acting ever. He stands like, what? Oh, man. I didn't do it. Just sign the confession. And you just literally watched a guy
take
somebody's life away and just throw their whole life. It's like, that guy's going to jail for the rest of his fucking life.
He should have taken an acting class, because when his moment came, he would have been ready.
He should have watched the first 48.
Yeah.
It's
always just ask weird. For a fucking lawyer.
You ever see that picture of the Ramirez brothers courtside, like an hour before they killed
the Menendez?
The Menendez, like the twin brothers or whatever. There's like a picture of them at a basketball game sitting courtside. Everybody's like cheering, and they're just like straight faced. It's an eerie fucking picture, and they're like, this was like 2 hours before they murdered their parents. Wow. Isn't that weird?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it'd be weirder if they were like stoked and like cheering and happy, you know?
Yeah.
That, well, you know what that just reminded me of? Do you remember in Scarface, when there's the comedian on stage and everybody's cheering and all of that stuff and everybody's watching and Tony's coked in the corner and everybody's dying laughing and De Palma just pans across and there's two people just sitting there like that and the ones with the Uzis under a napkin. Yeah. I love the Uzis under a napkin. Like at some point they just took them out and then put... Would you like something to drink? Hang on a second. Let me just put this right here.
Where's like, let me get that napkin. Like, no, don't touch the napkin. Leave the napkin.
Did you see that clip going around with Amber Heard snorting coke on the witness
stand? Yeah, I mean, I get my news from TMZ, and they said that was absolute bullshit.
Did you see it, though?
She looked like she watching that.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
She definitely did not do cocaine on the stand.
No.
Yeah,
but she's that crazy.
I'm not talking out of school because the guy put it in his book. If you want to see somebody doing cocaine on TV during a Super Bowl, Thomas Hollywood Henderson of the Dallas Cowboys, you have to read his book. His book is fucking unbelievable. The guy was doing, he was basically Lawrence Taylor before Lawrence Taylor, but because of drugs, he messed up his career. So that's why Lawrence Taylor looked like he fell out of the sky. Like there was no like link, you know, like with bands. It's like this band did this, then they did, oh, that's where they came from. It was like Lawrence Taylor just came from outer space. But like Hollywood Henderson was a linebacker. He like returned like a kickoff to open like a Super Bowl 10. Like nobody did that shit. And he almost got a touchdown. And he was doing coke in the 70s before people knew how to do coke. So it was just raw. He was like cutting it up with like a matchbook or something. And like his fucking nose was so fucked. He had a hole in his nose. Yeah. So what he would do before a game was he would just pack his nose with cocaine so it was numb. And then he would go out and play. And then during halftime, he'd be blowing his nose. It's Tom Landry, the straightest laced guy ever with like a fedora. Looked like he was on like Dragnet. Would be telling him what to do in the half, and he would be in there blowing his nose and then repacking it with cocaine. So anyway, when the second time the Cowboys played the Steelers in Super Bowl 13, he had cocaine and water. And remember those Vicks things when you had a cold? And there's footage of him going like that. And they people think he has like hay fever or something. He's actually fucking blowing lines in the Rose Bowl during the Super Bowl.
Damn. You ever just pack your hole with cocaine back in the day, Steve?
I discovered that I had the hole. It's called a deviated septum. And I discovered it when I was in the psych ward, like days after my intervention.
I
have been clean and sober ever since then.
How do you discover?
I just thought he went to an ears, nose, and throat doctor, and they flashed a light up this nostril and came out the other side. Steve, do you do cocaine? What are you talking?
I've taken pictures where I'll put the flashlight onto my cell phone and stick the flashlight in one nostril and fucking...
It really does that,
Yeah, you can see.
You got the Hollywood Bowl spotlight coming out the other one.
it's crazy, but it just I forget how, but once I discovered it, like I managed to thread my nose with a shoelace. Knoxville came to visit me in rehab.
The glass is always half full. This is really sad, or
a new trick,
an opportunity.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's gonna be a lot of cocaine you used to burn a hole through your nose, right?
I didn't fuck around, man. I was pretty strong in the drugs department. Hey, dude, fucking tell us again about this project that you're editing.
Oh, so yeah, it's a comedy. It's called Old Dads. It's just about guys my age that have kids later in life. And then you go to school and it's like your kid's in kindergarten and you were in kindergarten 50 years ago, but your brain goes back to that's the way it is and how everything's changed. And it's a simple comedy formula. But it's not done. It's like my act. Right. So it's definitely rated R, even though there's dads in the title. But I think people are going to like it.
And when's that projected to come?
I don't know. I'm supposed to, like, this whole summer I'm just living with the thing, and I'm actually enjoying editing, which I didn't think. I just, you know, I got massive fucking ADD, so I had to fight the whole, no, this takes looks good. It's like, no, we have to watch all the takes,
right?
Let's piece it together. And I'm just sitting there fucking, you know, nervous fucking restless leg syndrome watching it. But now I've settled into like that's what it is, and that's what's gonna fix this, any problem that I'm going to have in it. So I gave into it, you know. I'm drinking coffee now. I never drank coffee in my life, and just every once in a while I'm just like, you know, when you have your head in the oven, it's just like, I suck, and then you drink it. It's like, no, I'm awesome. Let's get this going.
And you're touring, but just not, like, just a few days at a time.
Yeah, I go out, you know, just a couple, 2-3 days, and yeah, and then I come back, hang with my kids, and, you know, I try to edit while my kids are at school, and then I'm, you know, it's a little bit, I come home a little bit after they've gone to school, but then I have that last 2 hours of crazy time with them every night, and it's funny, dude, like, how they view me. I didn't even realize it. My father-in-law was in town. He's the best dude. Like, I really lucked out with my in-laws. They're fucking really cool people. And he was just like laughing because I'm in the living room and it's just like they just jump on me, flying elbows and just, you know, coming off the couch and stuff. And you know, yeah, I'm definitely. I think I'm more like my wife is the one, like, she like throws down the gauntlet. And she's really good at it, and it takes a lot. Like, I have one tone of voice that I go to that they actually listen to me. Everything else, they're just like, ah, shut up, Dad. Like, I've kind of lost some credibility. I don't know if you can get that back. We'll see.
Do they have any concept of like your career or like what you do yet?
Not really, and I don't like, you know, I don't. Like, bring that. I don't have like fucking posters or shows or anything. There's nothing in the house that says that I do. But, you know, my daughter knows what I do. I don't want to watch my act. But my son has no concept, but my daughter like knows. But like, you know, I just have to explain to her when I go on the road, like, this is why we can go to Chuck E. Cheese and go skateboarding.
Right.
You
know? Right.
I gotta. Mm-hmm. The man has me running on the wheel. Okay. I'll explain that to you when you get a little older.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
I think I just
it you know, like I saw the accolade from Rolling Stone of being the heavyweight champ of rage-filled comedy.
Yeah,
and and I think it's just
that's someone who just watched clips before they had to write that.
Right.
Before they went out and hooked up with the 7th hottest woman in the world. What do I got to write about this bald orange idiot?
No, I love that. I love that. And I just find it ironic because you're the nicest guy, you know?
Yeah, and the perception, if you watch 2 minutes of my act, is that I walk around like... I mean, I was definitely a very angry man when I was in my 30s. When I was in my 20s, I didn't understand. I was still like, hey, you know, whatever you want to do, I want to do. And it was, oh, I love this guy. He does whatever. So I had this weird phase. And then in my 30s, as my life wasn't coming together the way I thought it was going to, which is, you know, what you're supposed to be doing. I'm at this age. I should be here. Like, the only thing that was working was my stand-up, and everything else was still, like, at the starting line. So I definitely went through that period. But, like, I kind of undid it in my 40s. And in my 50s, like, yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty simple person. Like, I'm not, there's not too many layers to me. Like, I swear to God, if I have like a sandwich and a fucking little cigar in an afternoon, I mean, that's it. I mean, what the fuck more do you need in life? So, I'm lucky that my wife understands like that too. Cause I was telling, you know, there's that disease in this business and just any business that if as you're selling more tickets or doing better in your job and you're making more and more, to buy more and have like a bigger life, or it's just like, or I could just fucking be happy with what I have, not buy any more shit, and then someday when this business is done with me and it kicks me to the curb, I didn't blow all my money on
right
dumb shit, and I can like you know, still eat some scrambled eggs and not have to panhandle.
Yeah, I'm not into any flashy shit really. I mean, I like to have a cool podcast, man, but.
Oh, dude, this is sick.
My tour bus is a piece of shit RV.
Like, oh, yeah. You know the one? I wanted to buy the one from Stripes. You know the one that GMC made with the 6 wheels? I always wanted to redo one of those, and there's one that's the Palm Desert package or something, and it's like total Ron Burgundy. It's that fucking 70s green with the floral, like, captain's chairs and a green shag rug. And I was just thinking, man, if I ever fucking redid one of those, put a humidor in there with some cigars and shit.
Oh, the moving cigar lounge.
Oh, my God. oh my god,
mobile cigar lounge.
Yeah,
be sick.
I know, but then you got to watch because then all your demons are just right there.
Put a stripper pole in here.
Yeah. That's another thing too. I learned. That's when my drinking got out of control. Was when I brought it home to the house. And then I could, I don't have to go out to a bar. Because before, like, I always had it under control because I had to go out, you know. If I felt like getting a drink, but I was at home and I was watching a game, you in your sweatpants, it's like, dude, I don't want to fucking take a shower and fucking go out and do all of that shit. So then you just wouldn't drink and then it wouldn't get a hold of you. But when I had it at home, yeah, I had this thing where part of conspiracy theory, you get massively overwhelmed and depressed when you're reading that shit. So how I after I got out of the conspiracy theory shit, I went the other way and I started watching like MeTV and all these old fucking shows from when I was a kid, and everybody on those shows drank and smoked. So I would just sit there. They were drinking. I was drinking with like Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. like every fucking night watching 77 Sunset Strip. And you know, it was started off with this, then it became that. Then my wife started getting on me, like, Jesus Christ, look at the size of it. I go, it's a home pour. You go out to a bar, they take out the eye droplet. It's just like, that's not a fucking drink. And then I remember one night I've told this story before. I came down the stairs because she goes, don't have another one. When you have three, you start snoring like your dog here. So I was like, all right. And then I was like, I just have two. I can just have two. Right. And then I was just like, you know, there's still, you know, 8 minutes left in the show. Pour another one. So I poured the other one. And it was over. And I was walking down the stairs to our bedroom. And I didn't know if she was still up or not. I literally was hiding it on the side of my leg, trying to make sure the ice cube wasn't going to clink against the side of the glass. And I was just like, I am like this close away from having a bottle in the back of the toilet. Let me just step away from this shit. So I'm not like an alcoholic, you know what I mean? But I do think that addiction is like, is more of a spectrum than you either are or you aren't. And I think that if you're a habit guy like me, no different than sugar and salt. Like, I never crave McDonald's unless I was in a jam and I ate it. And then for like the next 3 days, mm-hmm. like I see the golden arches everywhere. Like, dude, I'm going to get a fucking another double cheeseburger, man. So.
Yeah, I smoked a cigar and then I was like, man, are these bad for you? Then I looked up, I was like, how many cigars did George Burns smoke a day? And it was like 10 to 15. I'm like, great, I can do two a day. You know, it's like, it's so easy.
There's no way he smoked 10 to 15 a day.
Why? Google told me that. I don't know.
I know. And if you know who put that information out there, a cigar smoker that's trying to get his wife off his back. Yeah. He smoked 15 a day. Christ, I'm a lightweight.
Yeah. I'm only smoking 7.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, dude. Well, hey, man, let's get you back into your edit bay so you can be with your kids.
That was fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and, thank
you. I'm really happy for all you've already had success, but, like, to see you, like, I was so psyched when I saw you at Caroline's. I was telling my wife, I'm like, fucking Steve-O's playing Caroline's. I remember when he was, like, starting out, you know, he just got sober and all that, so I'm really happy for all of you.
Yeah, I appreciate that so
much,
man.
That's fucking awesome. And your dog rules.
Yes, she does.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah, man.
Thanks, bro.
All right, look at that. You slept through the whole thing.
What do you say to that? I mean, come on. It's so cool, dude. Sat down, and one of the first things he said is that I'm a legend. Are you kidding me? That guy is, I mean, what? Anybody in the world, top three. I mean, greatest comedians alive. Dude, so stoked on just knowing that guy, let alone like having such mutual respect. Dude, what a bro. I'm really, really stoked on that one. And as you know, I'm really, really stoked on you for sticking around to the end of the Wild Ride podcast. What can I tell you that that's special? Okay. I might have drummed up a new collab skateboard design for me and my bro Wee Man. Okay? You heard it here first. It's the fucking dopest design. Of all the skateboards I've designed, this is by far the dopest design. I can't wait for everybody to see it. And fuck, thank you so much. Yeah, dude.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.